Chapter 7, The Anatomy of an Othering Process. Call Dr. Fivey, the curious case of the incompatible belief system. Othering is a recognised psychological phenomenon. One brief definition of othering is as follows. The act of treating someone as though they are not part of a group and are different in some way. Othering can happen naturally. It happens according to nature and often cruelly between children in schools all over the world. Othering in the workplace or legal context here is used to mean the alienation of one individual from the group, which is effective to the extent that all agree the other person is effectively unable to access and vindicate the rights which should be available to all. This chapter details the othering of Susan O'Brien QC, the first appointed chair of the Scottish Child Abuse Inquiry. It was done with the intention of removing an independent public inquiry panel. I'm going to try to explain in the next chapter about the othering process used for me when I had cancer. Very cruel, callous, and unusual. First of all, in this part, I have to give you some background on how the SCAI began its life. The groupthink developed their othering skills to perfection with Susan O'Brien QC. The acute progression of my illness throughout 2016 coincided with the corruption involved in undermining the original Scottish Child Abuse Inquiry panel under Susan O'Brien QC. It was an instructive experience during which I witnessed the Scottish Government's civil servants at work for the first time and at first hand. Untrustworthy, duplicitous and scheming. It seemed to be part of their work culture. I'd never really worked with any civil servants before except in Crown Office. It was definitely an eye-opener. I witnessed groupthink in action as I'd never seen it before. When Susan O'Brien QC was appointed as chair of the SCAI in about late May to June 2015, I was the first person she contacted. Susan and I had worked together on cases involving the interests and welfare of children over the years since about 1999. Susan knew about my background working in residential social work with young people in the care system. She obviously also knew I'd been a High Court prosecutor and a part-time sheriff since 2010. Susan told me she knew I was the perfect fit as counsel to the inquiry, which was originally to be called the Historical Child Abuse Inquiry. It was the panel under Susan who decided to change the name. The term historical was felt by survivors to be inappropriate. Susan and I had also had various discussions over the years. She knew that I was concerned about persistent and recurring allegations of organised child sexual abuse by lawyers and judges and the exploitation of vulnerable and disadvantaged young people. In particular, Susan knew that I was concerned that allegations of child sexual abuse relating to Lord Hardy and others had to be investigated and considered. So Susan knew that I was the guy who knew where some of the bodies were buried, so to speak. As SCAI chair, she was signed up to making sure that material was properly investigated. That was to be her downfall. Susan was also initially interested to know whether I had any thoughts about the identity of an expert to join the inquiry panel. I immediately told her that Professor Michael Lamb of Cambridge University would be a perfect fit. I explained that Michael is one of the foremost developmental psychologists in the world. He's also an expert in devising and conducting scientifically demonstrated research. I suggested that Michael would be the perfect expert with a worldwide reputation and authority to give the inquiry real clout and credibility in a global context. I put Susan in touch with Michael once I'd sounded him out. Although they are very different characters with very different professional backgrounds and experience, there was a meeting of the minds between them. When the inquiry was being set up in the summer and early autumn of 2015, Susan was persuaded by the minister responsible, Angela Constance, to engage Scottish Government civil servants in key roles and to run the machinery of the inquiry. This was a massive mistake which ultimately cost Susan dearly. It cost her her position as inquiry chair. It was also at the expense of her reputation, courtesy of the sneaky and evil seconded civil servants. It's important to understand what happened. This is the way the Scottish Government runs public inquiries. There are other, more recent examples. Packing them with their own civil servants in key roles is the best way to manage independent public inquiries and make sure they reach the right, i.e. desired, conclusions. That's very dangerous in any public inquiry. It's completely unacceptable in the running of an inquiry for the investigation of child abuse. I watched them carefully while they set about their task. They seemed to operate in a groupthink pack by implementing their system of othering the target, making sure the target is isolated and can't access the sorts of rights and support that everyone else is entitled to. The person is other, different for some nebulous reason, and to be alienated from the group. There's a consensus, and the other person isn't part of that. Once othered, the target is monstered, differentiated from the group by a monstrous perceived or alleged characteristic or fault, which any right-thinking person would be horrified by. I know the modus well. It happened to Susan, and I saw it. It's happened to me now, too. Susan agreed with Constance to appoint Andrea Summers as solicitor to the inquiry. I got on well with Summers until I didn't. Tall and anxious, about everything, nothing was straightforward. You always had to work out what her angle was on any issue. She slowly divulged her agenda on any matter after trapping you into a committed view beforehand. No degree of candour. She told me she had been really upset at the conclusion of the last inquiry in which she was solicitor, or deputy solicitor. It related to infected blood products. The bereaved families were burning and throwing copies of the inquiry report at her. It was on the news. She was upset about that, big time. She didn't want that to happen on the SCAI. Summers came from Paisley. She went to Bredaland Primary School. I went to St Paul's when we lived in Paisley at the start of the 1970s. They were close to each other in Foxmar. We seemed to have some stuff in common, and children. Susan also agreed to appoint another civil servant, Julianne Jameson, as secretary to the SCAI. Now she came across as untrustworthy from the outset. Sleek it. On any issue, you could bank on her taking a bizarre and complicated angle. She complicated the hell out of any issue, no matter how small or insignificant. Mega manipulative, and with a voice that sounded to me like Roland Rat, if you remember that annoying little rodent. Jameson had this daily routine where she would be peering into her laptop first thing in the morning, checking all the diaries of the civil servants she was interested in. She'd be looking to see who was to be in meetings with whom. Then she tried to work out from her other civil servant knowledge what they were meeting about. Who was maybe getting ahead of her in the civil servant world or pecking order? Weird. I'd never seen anything like it before. Jameson and Summers immediately suggested two names as senior counsel for the inquiry. Colin McCauley and Jim Peoples. Unfortunately, I thought these were reasonable suggestions at the time. I regret that in retrospect. McCauley is the Scottish Government's safe pair of hands on public inquiries. He'd done it before. That's why they wanted him. Jameson and Summers didn't know what issues might arise, but they knew they could rely on McCauley no matter what. A self-serving islander from South Uist. A big Catholic like Jameson, but with lifelong personal connections to some of the Catholic hierarchy in Scotland, at boarding school with the Catholic bishops. McCauley was permitted to keep the SCAI chapters about child sexual and other abuses in and by the Catholic Church in Scotland under his own supervision. I witnessed the early stages, but the progression of matters in this manner was confirmed to Susan O'Brien KC by one of the counsel instructed by the SCAI, as opposed to having been appointed as counsel to the inquiry. That was David Sheldon KC. On 22nd of July 2021, Sheldon was trying to milk Susan for information about me. Susan later narrated the substance of part of their conversation as follows, and I'm quoting, "Dear John, you've asked me to write down what I recollect David Sheldon saying about Colin McCauley's area of work when I met David for lunch this time last year, 22nd of the 7th, 21. I remember him saying that Colin had kept investigations and work about the Catholic Church's involvement in child abuse to himself, when decisions about dividing up tasks were taken. David said that the end was in sight for that line of work, and I commented that Colin might well retire then, as he had clearly postponed his retirement for much longer than he had anticipated. I think I said I had always thought that his main interest was in the historic abuse within Catholic institutions, though of course he was conscientious in investigating many other issues. In the book, I replicate a school photograph from St Vincent's College Langbank, session 1964-65. It shows McCauley in S2, last on the right, second back row. Rosick shows Philip Tartaglia later to become Archbishop of Glasgow until his death in 2021. Macaulay later attended St Mary's College Blairs, forming enduring and lifelong relationships with many of the people who went on to become senior clergy in the Catholic Church in Scotland. At one early SCAI meeting in late 2015, I witnessed the warm exchanges between lifelong acquaintances when Macaulay met Bishop Joseph Toll, then chairman of the Safeguarding Commission for the Catholic Bishops in Scotland. "Hello, Colin. Hello, Joe." Their familiarity made me also a former Langbank and Blair's pupil from August 1975 until October 1977 very uncomfortable. The point here is conflict of interest. An active conflict capable of affecting the proper fulfilment of the SCAI's terms of reference in matters of acute public interest. The Catholic Church in Scotland has escaped full and proper investigation in relation to historical child and other abuse. That subject is worthy of a separate text. Macaulay was accurately described to me by one senior counsel as not being the person who'd stab you in the back, but being the one who'd create the opportunity, give the stabber the knife, and turn a blind eye during the attack. Sneaky, untrustworthy, and ruthless in his imperative for self-preservation, as I duly found out to my cost. Peoples is an employment law expert. His faculty profile includes the following details, I'm quoting. James A. Peoples has a civil advocacy and opinion practice with expertise and experience in many areas of civil practice, including commercial law, employment law, including discrimination in employment, judicial review, public and administrative law, human rights, and reparation, including both professional negligence and so on. The SCI had access, therefore, to the best disability discrimination advice and advocacy without the need for instructing external counsel, such as Brian Napier KC. Susan actually had to fight for Peoples to be appointed as a second senior counsel in August to September 2015. She even made representations in his behalf to make sure that he was paid the highest possible hourly rate. She got him £240 an hour. Then he betrayed her, passively at first, but vicious nonetheless. Macaulay was on £270 an hour, every hour, for 8 years now. Think about that and then consider what survivors of child sexual abuse are being offered by the Scottish Government's redress scheme. Incidentally, David Sheldon, KC, mentioned above, was someone I reached out to when he was diagnosed with cancer. This was in December 2018 when I was recovering. Despite that reaching out, offering to help if there was anything at all I could do for him, he tried to milk Susan O'Brien for information about me in 2021. He'd recovered by then and was working on the SCAI. Having been invited to lunch by Sheldon, Susan eventually formed the impression that he was actually trying to elicit information about me and my note for the SCAI dated the 1st of April 2019. He told Susan that Macaulay was thinking then about asking me for a witness statement about the note. He said he'd only been allowed to see a part of the note and that it was only available to Macaulay. Brazen. So basically, the original senior inquiry team was Susan, me, Macaulay, Peoples, Summers and Jameson. There was another Scottish Government civil servant called Mark Dorian, who was eventually given the title of Deputy Secretary. A dour, unsmiling Northern Irishman with a downbeat comment readily delivered on any aspect of daily life and work. Joy Sucker. But he too had been part of the Summers team on the previous report burning inquiry. Susan's concept of an inquiry capable of dealing with the sorts of sensitive issues and facts that would inevitably be raised was to make sure that decisions and findings were made on an evidenced base by a panel. This would allow for genuine expertise and experience of matters other than the law and justice system to have an equal input into any findings or conclusions that might be reached. Learning for the future welfare of children by what had been found to have gone wrong in the past. Susan was also committed to appointment on merit, so even prospective panel members had to apply for appointment and attend an interview. Professor Michael Lamb and Glenn Houston were the panel members who were appointed. Together with Susan, this was to be the inquiry panel. Glenn Houston was a Northern Irishman, generally upbeat, fresh-faced for his age, with career-long experience on government and Quango-type decision-making bodies concerned with people-focused issues in Northern Ireland. This appeared to be a panel with different skills and experience, which would provide balance, expertise, insight, know-how, and trauma-informed judgment on the necessary issues for investigation and resolution by the SCAI. The panel interviews were conducted by Susan, together with Summers and Jameson. Jameson was only too keen to tell me repeatedly afterwards that, "Oh, Michael didn't interview well." The implication was that Michael Lamb should not have been appointed to the inquiry panel, but Susan had insisted on him. This civil servant, with next to no experience of or expertise in asking questions of or interviewing anyone, thought she was well placed to comment on an interview with the king of forensic interviewing, but the irony was entirely lost on her. She was talking about her own limited grasp of that competency-based interviewing guff that allows civil servants to exclude those whom they don't want to appoint from interview competitions. Just Google Michael Lamb. Even if she was right in her absurd assessment, Michael Lamb didn't have to impress her. He's Michael Lamb, the only person of genuine worldwide respect and authority ever associated with the SCAI. But it was clear there was a discernible anti-Michael Lamb sentiment even from that early on from both Jameson and Summers. This was September 2015. This raised the question of what was being said, and by whom, in those Scottish Government and civil servant circles. I mean, what child abuse inquiry in the world would not grab Michael Lamb's expertise with both hands if they could get it? Scotland's is the answer. So the inquiry proper began in October 2015. Between then and Christmas, it was allowed to begin to get its act together, drafting protocols, engaging with survivor groups and institutions, and sorting out systems and personnel that would be necessary for its work. At each and every stage, however, Summers' palpable anxiety and Jameson's cack-handedness were burdensome. They were ably assisted by their already devoted civil servant underlings, who were then all over the inquiry at every conceivable level. Independent inquiry? I don't think so. Summers and Jameson asserted themselves on every possible issue, usually by passive-aggressive, manipulative means, rather than by honest and straightforward discussion. Meetings were numerous and daily, round and round on every conceivable issue, at a big sleep-inducing table. Utterly pointless, ineffective, and counterproductive. Summers and Jameson were ably assisted by another real nasty piece of work, Deputy Solicitor Felicity Cullen. Sharp and capable, undoubtedly, but really, really nasty. Very proud of her ability to deliver nasty English prose, in different formats as required. She had a first in English with nastiness, I think. Macaulay used to suck up to her. He insisted that all formal documents had to be run past her, to be felicitised, as he called it. An interesting appointment to the SCAI was Cullen, the daughter of Lord Cullen of Whitekirk, former Lord President of the Court of Session, Chair of the Dunblane and Piper Alpha Inquiries, Inquiry Meister, the right judge, as Michael Forsyth had requested in 1996. Felicity repeatedly emphasised that, in her view, the Queen Victoria School Dunblane should not be regarded as falling within the SCAI's jurisdiction. It was a school run by the Army for the children of service men and women serving abroad. It fell under the jurisdiction of the Army, or of the ICSA in London. Really? It was also a prime location for organised child trafficking and sexual abuse. Allegedly. Everyone had to use Scottish Government IT, laptops, Blackberries and the like. This worried me. Independent inquiry. The laptop's homepage was a Scottish Government civil servant zone. There was even a wee icon of that woman with the big payoff, Leslie Evans, at the top left of the home screen. She was telling everyone to do different things every single morning. A string of pearls at the base of her long neck. Remember to support the Scottish Government's views on this, that and the next matter that they all happened to be obsessed with at that time. Nicola says blah blah, promoting the cult of sturgeon. The ultimate in active management of groupthink. I'm not joking. It was like nothing I'd ever seen before. A completely Scottish Government contaminated work environment. And all apparently normalised. No one seemed to think there was anything untoward. Demonstrably not independent, no matter how much they protest. I had found it really weird that one of the first things everyone was asked about for the inquiry in September 2015 was the Christmas party. Weird. It seemed to me that this was some sort of priority. I'm used to not working in an environment in which I have to go to a Christmas party. Jameson's email about this came on the 28th of September 2015, prefaced with, "I appreciate that it is only September and we haven't officially started yet, but..." I thought the survivors of child sexual abuse would likely take a dim view of the documented priority issue. I also thought that survivors would take a dim view of the whole SCAI senior team going off to Australia to see their inquiry in action. Susan, Michael and Glenn agreed. Even Macaulay and Peoples agreed, so Summers and Jameson went on the long trip. Summers took the opportunity for her family to have a holiday in Singapore too. The inquiry was allowed to run until the new year in 2016. Then right at the start, the first week back to work after the festive period in January, the pressure seriously began to be applied by the Scottish Government overseers. Summers and Jameson were called to a meeting with a civil servant from the sponsorship team. His name was Donald Henderson. The meeting was on the 7th of January 2016. At the meeting, Henderson proposed regular undocumented meetings between Susan and Constance as relevant minister. When Summers suggested the independence of the inquiry might be compromised by that, Henderson then obliquely referred to the, quote, nuclear option. The Sunday Times reported on it in May 2019, and I referenced the article in a footnote in the text. It became clear to both Summers and Jameson that Henderson was actually threatening to remove Susan as chair of the SCAI. Unthinkable. But it happened. And Summers and Jameson played vital roles in the plan and its cruel and calculated implementation and execution. It was clear that when Henderson made the nuclear option threat, Summers and Jameson hadn't been involved in the removal plan's formulation at that point. That's why they reported back with apparent horror exactly what Henderson had said, in detail, and they reported it to the whole senior inquiry team and panel members. You see, their civil servant cack-handedness until that point had been a straightforward manifestation of how they operate, maybe with a bit of attitude based on what they'd heard from others, but they and their civil servant team weren't undermining and plotting until well after the 7th of January 2016 meeting with Donald Henderson. Henderson's threat was a genuine surprise to them at that time, but they learned fast. It wasn't until about March 2016 time that I had any real indication of a change in the attitudes of either Summers or Jameson. However, in about March 2016, Summers told me she had been called to a meeting by her Scottish Government boss. He was a solicitor to the Scottish Government. He was called Murray Sinclair. Google him. I remember seeing he had sadly died of cancer in about 2018. While I was still recovering from my 8 cycles of chemotherapy. Summers told me that the meeting with Sinclair was an annual sort of appraisal or supervision type thing. When Summers came back from the meeting, I was keen to ask her how she'd got on. She was very anxious about it beforehand. She was evidently uncomfortable at being asked. She tried unconvincingly to pass it off as just normal, routine supervision from the boss. But that didn't sit well with being the independent, seconded solicitor to the independent SCAI. So I asked her again. She said something to me about having to think about her future progression. What would she be able to do after working on the inquiry? Now, I found that odd. But I came to realise what it meant as the weeks and months of 2016 went on. Summers and Jameson definitely moved into active undermining and othering mode around that time. From March to April 2016. As I've said, othering appears to be an essential tool for movement towards the first elementary step on the route to monstering. They completed the whole process with Susan. From that time on, Summers actively sought to confront and undermine Susan at every possible turn, but in a passive-aggressive way. Sulky, sullen and silent. Face-tripping her all the time. About everything. She appeared to be trying to set up a bullying complaint against Susan. Utter nonsense. She even took weeks off work and stayed at home. She even resigned. Yes, Summers resigned as solicitor to the SCAI in about May 2016. and she has never been reappointed. When she resigned, it was Glenn Houston who was adamant that she should be required to return an inquiry laptop and mobile. She never did. I'm sure she was kept in the loop by her boss, Murray Sinclair, and Jameson about the developing plot to undermine, humiliate, and remove Susan O'Brien from her position as chair of the SCAI in the spring and summer of 2016. They managed to do it. It was astonishing how it was achieved. There was an active process within the civil servant inquiry staff to other Susan. Nebulous and opaque at first, it quickly developed and gained momentum among the cohorts. It was enthusiastically pursued by Felicity Cullen and, in a downbeat manner, by Mark Dorian. He even accused Michael Lamb of breaching the inquiry's IT policy because of problems Michael had, through absolutely no fault of his own, with the laptop he was sent. A definite them and us situation developed. Crucially, Macaulay and Peoples made it clear that their loyalties lay with the civil servants and not with Susan, Michael and me. Glenn Houston tried to hedge his bets so that he could remain part of whatever survived, but it became clear that meltdown was imminent. Part of Michael Lamb's expertise is in forensic interviewing and questioning of children and vulnerable people. Macaulay and Peoples refused to attend a training session which had been arranged with Michael for that purpose. It's a total joke. Verbose and hopeless Jim Peoples has nothing to learn from Michael Lamb on forensic questioning. Only in Scotland. When the othering process was at its most developed stage, the civil servants on the inquiry, led by Jameson and Cullen, because Summers was absent having resigned, and with the backing of Macaulay and Peoples, conjured up an opinion from a psychologist, which asserted that Susan's belief system was incompatible with holding the position as chair of the inquiry. When I say conjured up, this was an opinion solicited and requested from Fivey by Jameson and Cullen. Jameson initially lied about this to the senior inquiry team. She emailed urgently late on a Friday evening that Dr. Claire Fivey had contacted the inquiry. Lies. Fivey was wholly unqualified to express such an opinion. She was a former SNP councillor. Utterly farcical. She had the brazen cheek to give this opinion in the face of one of the world's foremost developmental psychologists. Not based on any empirically verifiable material, based on her qualifications and experience. As if they provide a license to do some kind of magic assessment, like mind reading. But it got backing from the new minister responsible for the SCAI after June 2016 election. That was John Swinney. Donald Henderson became his right man, so effectively the chair of an independent public inquiry was removed by a government employee at the request of the secretary to the inquiry, also a government employee. I tried to persuade Susan O'Brien to take action against Fivey and to sack all inquiry staff and senior team and replace them with independents. She didn't. I would have. Eventually, Susan resigned. The pressure placed on her in the media and by Swinney and his minions was intolerable. Disgusting. And what did she do when she resigned? She went back to her part-time judicial role as a member of the Regulation of Investigatory Powers Tribunal. Now, she was so deficient as chair of the SCAI, with a belief system that was incompatible with fulfilling that role. How was that possible? Simple. Because the monstering of Susan wasn't true. It was bogus, made up, like that guy Phil Gormley, Chief Constable of Police Scotland, who was suspended for eons for stuff he didn't do, and he subsequently walked away to a much more responsible job. Nasty. So they could put their own people into essential roles. The right people for the right outcomes. The roadmap to Susan's resignation was brutal and vicious. The whole affair was so concerning that it was Michael Lamb who resigned from the inquiry panel first. To Scotland's utter shame, the only world authority figure ever associated with the SCAI resigned, complaining of Scottish Government interference with its independence. This serious accusation from a wholly serious figure of world renown was simply swept away by First Minister Nicola Sturgeon in the Scottish Parliament. She simply said she thanked Professor Lamb for his work and didn't accept the truth of his accusation. pathetic, insulting, politically expedient, and untrue. Sturgeon lied to Parliament. Swinney was primarily responsible for the lies. You can Google all the parliamentary lies, and in a footnote, I've referenced the various documentation in the book. They're also contained in the report of the proceedings in the Scottish Parliament on Thursday 30th of June 2016, as represented by the First Minister Nicola Sturgeon, and I'm quoting, "We do not accept Professor Lamb's comments about the independence of the inquiry. Key decisions in relation to the direction of the inquiry within the terms of reference and its programme of work are taken by the inquiry panel, which is supported by the inquiry secretary. However, under the Inquiries Act 2005, the Scottish Government has an obligation to fulfil its responsibilities, and I believe that we have acted appropriately in doing so. Our priority now remains to support the successful operation of the inquiry and to ensure that the current situation does not impact on its progress in the weeks and months to come." You could be forgiven for reading this rubbish and believing it, but think about this. The First Minister makes reference to the work taken by the inquiry panel. There was no inquiry panel at the time. There was no inquiry. It had been undermined, its chair monstered, and the panel taken apart by Scottish Government civil servants. There was no operation of the inquiry. A public inquiry under the Inquiries Act 2005 cannot exist or act without a panel. This statement by the First Minister to the Scottish Parliament is essentially untruthful. As I've said, Scotland's shame. Susan O'Brien had been successfully set up and very publicly and unfairly humiliated and monstered by Jameson, Summers, Fivey, Cullen, Swinney and Henderson, among others. It was utterly disgraceful. But much worse was to befall the fate of the SCAI. Lady Smith as chair. Macaulay and Peoples betrayed a fellow QC whom they had known to be an honest, decent and committed professional throughout her lengthy career in the law. They betrayed a colleague who had tried her best to promote their interests in negotiations with Constance when setting up the inquiry. Weak, pathetic, but worst of all, greedy men. Hopeless, feathering their own nests and prepared to cover up serious allegations of organised child sexual exploitation and abuse by failing to demand and drive the need for investigation. The imperative for self-preservation appeared to justify, in their own minds and consciences, conduct which repeatedly and steadfastly fell very short of the seven lamps of the advocate.